Hi, I'm Barb Magella, and you're listening to Strange Brew, with unusual facts, random information, and trivia from Mental Floss Online, and far-fetched, not at all factual news stories from The Onion Online. These readings may be irreverent and could, on occasion, contain language and content that some might find offensive. I hope you'll enjoy the program. Tonight, let's start with a story from mentalfloss.com. From mentalfloss.com. Space. NASA's first all-female spacewalk is really happening this time. By Hannah McDonald. October 2019. After a surprising cancellation in March, plans for NASA's first all-female spacewalk are back on track. Astronauts Christina Koch and Jessica Meir are scheduled to make history on October 21, 2019. Earlier this year, NASA canceled the first all-female spacewalk because of an issue with spacesuit sizing. Both astronauts originally scheduled for the walk needed medium-sized suits. At the time, the International Space Station had two, but only one was properly configured for a spacewalk. Preparing the other suit in time would have taken hours of crew labor, the New York Times reported. So NASA decided to switch out the astronauts. When you have the option of just switching people, the mission becomes more important than a cool milestone, NASA spokesperson Stephanie Sheerholz told the New York Times. Still, the milestone is a significant one. Since 1961, nearly 550 people have been sent to space. Of those, only about 11% have been female. I think it's important because of the historical nature of what we're doing, and in the past, women haven't always been at the table, Koch said on NASA TV. There are a lot of people that derive motivation from inspiring stories from people who look like them, and I think it's an important aspect of the story to tell. The mission itself is fairly routine. Koch and Meir are scheduled to swap out batteries on the station's solar panels. Live video of the spacewalk, the 222nd spacewalk in history, will be available on NASA's website. From mentalfloss.com, big questions. Why do we eat candy on Halloween? By Michelle Debchak, October 2019. On October 31st, hordes of children armed with jack-o'-lantern-shaped buckets and pillowcases will take to the streets in search of sugar. Trick-or-treating for candy is synonymous with Halloween, but the tradition had to go through a centuries-long evolution to arrive at the place it is today. So how did the holiday become an opportunity for kids to get free sweets? You can blame pagans, Catholics, and candy companies. Historians agree that a Celtic autumn festival called Samhain was the precursor to modern Halloween. Samhain was a time to celebrate the last harvest of the year and the approach of the winter season. It was also a festival for honoring the dead. One way Celts may have appeased the spirits they believed still walked the earth was by leaving treats on their doorsteps. When Catholics infiltrated Ireland in the first century CE, they rebranded many pagan holidays to fit their religion. November 1st became the Feasts of All Saints and All Souls, and the day before it was dubbed All Hallows' Eve. The new holidays looked a lot different from the original Celtic festival, but many traditions stuck around, including the practice of honoring the dead with food. The food of choice for Christians became soul cakes, small pastries usually baked with expensive ingredients and spices like currants and saffron. Instead of leaving them outside for passing ghosts, soul cakes were distributed to beggars who went door to door, promising to pray for souls of the deceased in exchange for something to eat. Sometimes they wore costumes to honor the saints, something pagans originally did to avoid being harassed by evil spirits. The ritual, known as souling, is believed to have planted the seeds for modern-day trick-or-treating. Souling didn't survive the holiday's migration from Europe to the United States. In America, the first Halloween celebrations were a way to mark the end-of-year harvest season, and the food that was served mainly consisted of homemade seasonal treats, like caramel apples and mixed nuts. There were no soul cakes, or candies for that matter, to be found. It wasn't until the 1950s that trick-or-treating gained popularity in the U.S. following the Great Depression and World War II. The suburbs were booming, and people were looking for excuses to have fun and get to know their neighbors. The old practice of souling was resurrected and made into an excuse for kids to dress up in costumes and roam their neighborhoods. Common trick-or-treat offerings included nuts, coins, and homemade baked goods, treats that most kids would turn their noses up at today. That changed when the candy companies got their hands on the holiday. They had already convinced consumers that they needed candy on Christmas and Easter, and they were looking for an equally lucrative opportunity to market candy in the fall. The new practice of trick-or-treating was almost too good to be true. Manufacturers downsized candies into smaller, bite-sized packages and began marketing them as treats for Halloween. Adults were grateful to have a convenient alternative to baking. Kids loved the sweet treats, and the candy companies made billions. Today, it's hard to imagine Halloween without Skittles, chocolate bars, and the perennial candy corn debates. But when you're digging through a bag or bowl of Halloween candy this October, remember that you could have been eating soul cakes instead. Have you got a big question? If so, email us at bigquestions@mentalfloss.com. From mentalfloss.com, Live Smarter by Ellen Gutowski, October 2019. At one time or another, you've probably forgotten someone's name immediately after they introduced themselves. You can always ask someone else to remind you what it was later, or even do a little social media sleuthing to find the mystery person's profiles through mutual friends. Having said that, you don't always realize you've even forgotten the person's name until the next time they're standing right in front of you. All things considered, the best time to commit a moniker to memory is the first time you hear it. To keep it from slipping away, Lifehacker has a simple trick. Right after someone, say Peter, says his name, start soundlessly chanting it in your mind. Even though he's only said it once, you'll hear it dozens of times, and the repetition will give you a chance to really connect his face to his name. As Peter continues talking, you'll be able to pick up information beyond his appearance that you can attach to his name. By the end of the conversation, the name that began as a one-word chant with no context will become a multidimensional person who enjoys collecting records and watching World War II epics. In other words, it's much harder to forget a name if it isn't just a name. Another tip is to make the conversation about the person's name. Since they've just introduced themselves, it might be the only opportunity you'll have to talk about their name without it seeming out of the blue. An easy way to do this is to ask them about spelling, particularly if it's a name you don't recognize, or a name with multiple spellings, like Catherine or Haley. And even if you're not directly talking about a person's name, you can still say it aloud once or twice. After Peter introduces himself, say, "Nice to meet you, Peter." And at the end of the conversation, part ways with a, "Great talking with you, Peter," or something similar. Above all, if you know you're about to meet someone, you should decide that your primary goal for the conversation is to remember their name. From mentalfloss.com, Science. 9 Surprising Facts About the Scientific Study of Sex by Ross Bennis, October 2019. The scientific study of sex is much more exciting than an awkward sex ed class. While writing my book, Sex Weirdopedia, these were some of the most interesting facts about science and sex that I came across. 1. Some sex researchers didn't want their findings to get into the wrong hands. The pioneering sex researcher, Richard von Krafft-Ebing, didn't want his knowledge in the hands of ordinary folk. So he wrote Psychopathia Sexualis, the founding document of modern sexology, which was published in Germany in 1886, then translated and published in English in 1939, but originally in Latin, to discourage regular Joes and or Janes from reading it. 2. You burn more calories mowing the lawn than you do having sex. Sex might seem strenuous when things get hot and heavy, but it's usually not that great of a workout. You'd have to go at it for nearly 200 minutes to burn as much energy having sex as you do during a 30-minute run. Even mowing the lawn burns about 3 times more calories than sex. According to the British Heart Foundation, sex burns about the same amount of energy per minute as ironing clothes. 3. A surprising number of mothers claim to be virgins. In a 2013 study of several thousand pregnant women in the U.S. published by BMJ, about 1% of the participants claimed they were virgins when they gave birth. This, of course, calls into question the veracity of studies that rely on self-reported sexual behaviors. 4. Penicillin may have ignited the sexual revolution. One economist says that penicillin and not the birth control pill was the real enabler of the sexual revolution. A study published in the Archives of Sexual Behavior in 2013 shows that penicillin contributed to a 75% decline in the number of deaths caused by syphilis from 1947 to 1957. Since the new treatment made safe sex, people started having riskier sex, which resulted in increases in the number of children born out of wedlock and teenage pregnancies. 5. Twins can have different dads. While it is very rare, it is possible for fraternal twins to have two different fathers. What's more common is for a rom-com to be based on this scenario. 6. Gender may influence how people handle sexual jealousy. Research from evolutionary psychologists indicates that people's gender influences how they react to sexual jealousy. For men, they react more strongly to sexual unfaithfulness than emotional infidelity. For women, it is the reverse. The theory behind these behaviors comes back to evolution. Males who were intolerant toward their wives becoming sexually active with other men were less likely to become an object of derision and more likely to see their own genes pass on to future generations. Women who prevented their husbands from emotionally bonding with other women reduced the chances of the men spending their resources on other women. 7. One of Ivan Pavlov's colleagues created his own slightly X-rated conditioning experiment with dogs. You're probably aware of Russian researcher Ivan Pavlov and his famous conditioning experiment in which he trained a dog to salivate at the sound of a bell. What you might not know is that one of Pavlov's American students, W. Horsley Gant, conditioned dogs to become sexually aroused when they heard specific tones. The experiment, according to Mandy Merck's In Your Face, 9 Sexual Studies, was intended to study conflicts of the drives between experimentally induced anxiety states and sexual excitement. 8. Couples whose first child is a girl are more likely to get divorced. Married couples whose first child is a girl are more likely to get divorced than those whose first child is a boy. Scientists are split as to why this is. One theory is that female embryos are better able to endure maternal stress than male embryos, so pregnant women in unhappy marriages are less likely to have a miscarriage if the child they are bearing is a girl. But once they have a daughter, these couples are more likely to split up, since there were already fissures in their relationship prior to the child's birth. 9. There's a link between pubic hair and STIs. A downside of pubic grooming is that it might raise STI risk. In a study conducted by a University of Texas scholar, people who regularly shaved their pubic areas contracted STIs about 80% more often than those who never shaved down there. One suggestion is that those who regularly shave are more likely to tear their skin, making it easier for viruses to enter the body. Ross Bennis is the author of Sex Weirdopedia, the ultimate book of shocking, scandalous, and incredibly bizarre sex facts. And now let's move on to some outrageous and totally bogus news from TheOnion.com. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Mark Zuckerberg announces all of Facebook's future decisions will be made by the Cube of Justice. October 18, 2019, Menlo Park, California. In an effort to put to rest concerns about the direction of the social media giant, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced Friday that all of the company's future decisions would be made by the Cube of Justice, which reportedly cannot be questioned nor misled by any mortal means. "We've heard your concerns about the content we chose to promote on our platform, and I would like to assure you that the Cube knows all, sees all, and judges all. It is the ultimate arbiter, and from now on, it will tell us the correct course of action in all situations," said Zuckerberg, standing next to the glowing and softly humming object, while neglecting to answer any questions about how the Cube of Justice was made or where it came from. "It's not up to any one individual, company, or even government to tell us how to navigate the complicated waters of disinformation and free speech. Only the Cube can answer these questions, and from now on, it will guide us infallibly. All praise be unto its glorious eight corners." At press time, the Cube had begun emitting a loud screeching noise and was rapidly expanding in size, leading a pale and shaking Zuckerberg to warn that the Cube could not be stopped. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. New Facebook terms of service includes compulsory conscription into Zuckerberg's upcoming war against government. October 1, 2019, Menlo Park, California. Calling the update critical for the security of its billions of users, Facebook unveiled a new Terms of Service contract Tuesday that included compulsory conscription into Mark Zuckerberg's upcoming war against the U.S. government. "By continuing to use Facebook, you hereby agree to serve as a loyal foot soldier in any wars, domestic or overseas, that must be fought to defend Mark Zuckerberg and his company from hostile forces," said the 10,000-word legal update, which, over the course of the day, drafted all current Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp users between the ages of 18 and 26 into its military and subsequently instructed them to immediately report to the company's Menlo Park headquarters. Once this agreement has been ratified, Facebook reserves the right to summon users for medical inspection, at which point eligible users will be trained and ultimately deployed to take down any government that threatens our social network sovereignty, including the United States of America. In addition, once signed, all users will be required to renounce their country of birth and automatically become a citizen of Facebook. At press time, millions of users clad in masks and camouflage could be seen marching outside Facebook HQ, shooting at targets featuring images of Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Man starting to think Adam's family not like other families. October 17, 2019, Miami. Watching carefully as the early scenes introduced each member of the household, local moviegoer Scott Pienbega reported Thursday that he was beginning to suspect the group of oddly dressed characters at the center of the new animated film The Addams Family was not like most families. With a name like Addams, I just assumed this was going to be a traditional all-American family. But now I find myself wondering if they aren't all just a little bit off in some way, said Pienbega, noting that each person living in the sprawling Gothic home seemed to have tastes, appearances, and personality quirks that were unusual compared with what you might ordinarily see. I can't quite put my finger on it. The mother seemed kind of normal at first, if maybe a little too beautiful, but that cousin of theirs is way, way out there. I don't want to jump to any conclusions here, but it's almost as if there's something a bit macabre about this whole extended family. At press time, Pienbega had reportedly left halfway through the film after concluding the characters on screen were altogether far too ooky for him to continue. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. You'll never take me alive, shouts Giuliani, jumping onto chandelier and immediately falling three stories. October 16, 2019, New York. Leaping from a banister on the upper story of a Manhattan luxury hotel, the president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, reportedly shouted, "You'll never take me alive," Wednesday, before jumping towards a chandelier and immediately falling three stories onto the floor below. "Good luck catching me as I disappear like a ghost in the wind. Ha ha, you can't catch someone who never existed. Sayonara, suckers," said the former New York City mayor, who moments before had scrambled up the hotel's guardrail after watching a CNN report implicating him in the Trump-Ukraine scandal, his fingers grazing the very bottom of the ornate light fixture as he plummeted downward, smashing into the marble floor with a dull, wet thud. "Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, God, my fucking back. Oh, it hurts so bad. Oh, Jesus Christ." At press time, the hotel's guests were politely sidestepping a bleeding and toothless Giuliani as he painfully crawled under a grand piano to hide from the authorities. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Trump supporter comes away from Democratic debate with a pretty clear idea of which candidate he's going to kill. October 16, 2019, Lancaster, Ohio. Admitting that he had been struggling to identify which candidate he preferred, local Trump supporter James Brimhall told reporters Wednesday that he came away from the Democratic debates with a more clear idea of who he wanted to kill. "Early on, I thought it was definitely going to be Biden, but a lot of other candidates made great points about why they needed to be killed to save America, so I was really torn," said Brimhall, who claimed hearing Bernie Sanders' arguments for universal health care put him at the top of his list for a few months. "I was actually flirting with Andrew Yang for a bit. His freedom dividend seems like exactly the kind of idea I need to cleanse from the face of the earth. But there wasn't much beyond that. I'm honestly leaning towards Warren now. She has a lot of proposals, and her fire during the debate really stood out as something I would want to destroy. Plus, I like that she's a woman." Brimhall added that we would probably hold off making a final decision Brimhall added that he would probably hold off making his final decision until after President Trump singles one out as an enemy of America. From TheOnion.com News in Brief. Bernie Sanders unveils plan to tackle income inequality with art heist from billionaire's home. October 1, 2019. Las Vegas. Championing his new policy proposal as a way to reduce the gap between the working class and the 1%, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders unveiled a comprehensive plan Tuesday to tackle income inequality with an art heist from a billionaire's home. We should not be living in a country where all the wealth is concentrated in a few very rich people, which is why my new plan to remove artworks from an ultra-wealthy estate in the dead of night and sell them through third parties will redistribute hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Pollocks, de Koenigs, and Rothkos to the hard-working American people, said Sanders of the detailed 85-page plan outlining his system to lift expensive paintings, sculptures, jewels, and other artworks from billionaires' private collections in their homes in the Hamptons, Upper East Side, and Palo Alto. Million-dollar Impressionist paintings and modernist sculptures should be a public good, not kept locked up in some CEO's mansion. Using a progressive seizure rate that takes the most art from the wealthiest individuals, my plan will go a long way toward shrinking the gap between the haves and have-nots in this country. It describes in great detail how I will put the suction cups on my hands and climb to the window, then use one of those circular cutters to remove a pane of glass from the ceiling in order to place my grappling hook to rappel down. My plan also calls for building a diverse working-class coalition of Americans to put on cable repairman clothes, gain entry to the house, disable the alarm system to access complicated private safes in under 30 seconds, and then wait outside in a requisitioned UPS delivery truck for a quick escape. Under my proposal, we'll be able to offload the stolen Monets, Picassos, and Warhols to pay for free college for all Americans. At press time, the media was criticizing Sanders' proposal by questioning how the candidate intended to pay for all the black ski masks, razor blades for cutting paintings out of their frames, and getaway vans described in his plan. From TheOnion.com, News in Brief. 70-year-old man worried he's running out of time to have kids. October 1, 2019. Topeka, Kansas. After spending decades focused solely on his career and then retirement, local 70-year-old man Dennis Lambert was reportedly worried Tuesday that he was running out of time to have kids. My biological clock is ticking, and I'm concerned there won't be many more opportunities to start a family, said Lambert, explaining that when you're getting up there in age, there are certain realities you have to start thinking about. Namely, that you may only have 10 or 20 viable years left to father a child, unless you want to be that 95-year-old dad playing with his kid at the park, being watched in silent judgment by onlookers. I'm worried that I'm going to wake up one day and realize the chance to have children has passed me by because I'm dead. It just sucks that as a man, you only have this small 80-year window in which you're able to procreate, and that you're forced to choose between enjoying your retirement or having children. At press time, Lambert was considering freezing his sperm. From TheOnion.com, News in Brief. TSA to phase out glue-sniffing dogs, October 1, 2019. Arlington, Virginia. In response to a recent spate of incidents in which the specially trained canines became far too impaired to perform law enforcement duties, the Transportation Security Administration announced plans Tuesday to phase out glue-sniffing dogs. Upon exhaustive internal review of extensive and sometimes overwhelming evidence, this agency will immediately move to eliminate the use of glue-sniffing dogs in the airport screening process due to their tendency to get really fucked up on the job and just pass right out in the middle of security lines, said TSA Administrator David Pipkowski. explaining that while the dogs were in fact demonstrably effective at locating glue, the program was cost prohibitive, quite possibly ill-conceived, uncertain in origin, and had not increased public safety in any measurable way. This decision was made much easier because the dogs began to get really aggressive if they were not able to sniff out any glue after the 3 to 5 ounces administered by their handlers at the beginning of their shifts. We also found evidence that these dogs eventually move on to harder stuff, such as spray paint or solvents. At press time, the TSA unveiled plans to humanely euthanize all of the newly laid-off dogs using large volumes of whippets. And that's all we have time for tonight. You've been listening to Strange Brew, with stories from October 2019, mentalfloss.com, and October 2019, theonion.com. I hope you enjoyed the program, and you'll tune in again next Friday for more Strange Brew. Until then, this is Barb Magella wishing you a good evening and a great week.